first things first, let's talk about a undefeated Tennessee baseball team. Is this a year that all of a sudden we're going to have to talk about Tennessee from a national standpoint, or is it let's just wait, pump the brakes, and see how this plays out?
Yeah, let's wait and pump the brakes to see how this plays out. They started pretty strong last year, not quite to this extent, and they played tougher competition this year than last year at this time, but it started out pretty strong last year, and I think that as long as there's an incremental increase over what you got last year, just incremental improvement is all people are asking. You know, baseball's been so bad for so long here, and it didn't make a lot of sense considering the people that you were able to bring in to be the coach, and it just never worked. Well, I mean, right now Tony Vitello has it rolling, and he's done a great job of recruiting guys that aren't going to the draft, which is something that's been a problem for Tennessee. And the baseball team, not getting a lot of headlines. Fans aren't necessarily invested just yet, but I do think maybe after that loss with the basketball team last night, they'll start turning their attention to baseball.
Well, when you beat a team ranked either one or two in Texas Tech last week, also a ranked Stanford team, you know, there's reasons why your head should be turned just a little bit right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the unfortunate part in sports in 2020 is that people are used to not paying attention to you. It's tough to get them back on board. One of the reasons I think you've done a good job pointing out, if you're one of the lower-level programs in the SEC, you don't promote yourself. Why are you wasting this opportunity? And why wouldn't you give people an opportunity to pay attention to you? So Tennessee baseball's not done a great job marketing the sport in the past, and they have the people behind it now from the social media and the sports information side, and they have a coach that does a great job trying to market his sport a little bit more than some of the other guys did. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe this year, especially with the improvement to the stadium, because that was a lot of it. The stadium was just it was just trash, and they've done a great job improving it over the last few years. You could actually park at the stadium, which is nice. Used to, it was just figure out parking on campus somehow, some way, and enjoy the tickets that you get. Now they have a dedicated parking garage to the stadium, and that's helping. And they still, it's a really nice environment. So hopefully this is a year that Tennessee fans kind of get back into the baseball thing more, you know, for the first time probably since Rod Delmonico was the coach.
Will West joining us again from Knoxville. Let's turn our attention to men's basketball. And here's the problem as we get down to the nitty-gritty, the remaining three regular season games. The bottom line is that, you know, as far as the opening night, the Wednesday contest, got a pretty good idea. Georgia, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt will be three of those four teams. The problem, Alabama and Tennessee slipping to the point where they or Arkansas, Missouri, one of those four are also going to be playing on the Wednesday night.
Yeah, and it could be Tennessee. It could absolutely be Tennessee. And with the way that it's going right now, it's hard to believe they're going to win any of the next three games. And while there have been bright spots of the Tennessee team, and I think the future's really bright for them moving forward, it's just kind of a train wreck right now. And they can't shoot, and that's a bad combination with when you have really inexperienced guys that also just can't hit shots when they get them. It's a bad combination. And so we saw against Auburn what happens with Santiago Viscovi, who was a guy that, you know, even when he got cleared by the NCAA and signed with Tennessee, Rick Barnes told us point blank he's not going to play this year. And they ended up not having a choice. They had to play him this year because of Lamonte Turner's injury and Devontae Gaines not able to step into that role. So you're playing him. He wasn't supposed to play. You've got, another Kumwa who's a nice big, I think, but he was raw. And he should be fine by the time he's, you know, into the sophomore year, into his junior year. He'll be a nice player for you. Right now, he's not giving you a ton off the bench. Drew Pember was brought in to be just a back end of your rotation three-point help, and he's had to play quality minutes for Tennessee right now. And Jordan Bowden's had the worst shooting season of his career, and I think part of that's the three-point line getting moved. I think part of that is he's trying to do too much after Lamonte's injury and knowing if he doesn't make a basket, nobody else is going to. And right now, there's a better chance that Tennessee ends up with a losing record this year than not, I think.
And that's the problem, too. You know, at this point, you're trying to hold on, get some more valuable experience just making it to the NIT. At this point, it's not looking good at all for that.
No, probably not. I mean, we were talking about that this morning. Do you take a CIT or CTI, whatever it is, the College Invitational Tournament invite if you're Tennessee? And I think you do, possibly, just to get some experience with this team because Josiah Jordan James, five-star guy, has been injured all year, and he wasn't able to practice heading into the season, work with the team. He's been injured most of the regular season. Viscovi, like I said, the court that Viscovi was playing on isn't a regulation-sized court. That's the way that the NBA Academy in South America was. It's not even a regulation-sized court, so he had not played on a regulation-sized court, in a sanctioned game in his career, and he jumps into being the starting point guard at Tennessee in the middle of an SEC slate, right? So this team could use probably the work, but the NIT, it's not off the table, but it's probably not particularly likely that Tennessee makes even the NIT this year.
Let's turn our attention to football. Vanderbilt right now this week began spring drills just around the corner. Tennessee, along with the other programs as well. Some news that may have some ripple effect throughout the conference this week. A longtime strength and conditioning coach at Alabama. He was also part of that program at LSU. He's been a part of all six national championships for Nick Saban, the one at LSU, the five at Alabama. He wanted the opportunity to coach on the field. Nick Saban says there was just nothing there. And so all of a sudden Lane Kiffin tried to lure Scott Cochran away, and that didn't work out. But Kirby Smart was fortunate enough to be able to pull that off. How do you see this playing out, how it improves Georgia, how it weakens Alabama, or will there be any effect at all?
Yeah, so I do think it definitely weakens Alabama. And the biggest reason is, I know you know this, but most of the listeners probably don't know this, that the strength and conditioning coach runs that program outside of the practice periods, game season, that's it. The rest of it's run pretty much by the strength coach, the entire program. I think Scott Cochran is a guy who's paid his dues, and he's trying to say, okay, how do I have some level of upward mobility? If I'm the one running the program day in, day out, running the players day in, day out, managing the program, especially when we see guys like Ed Ogeron and Dabo Swinney, who are more they are the managers of the program, and then they hire coordinators to kind of handle everything else. It makes sense for Scott Cochran to kind of want to have upward mobility and maybe say, if I can be the guy that runs Alabama's program, why can't I be the head coach somewhere else? And I think he's the first of probably many strength and conditioning coaches that will try to make this sort of transition. I don't know how it's going to work for him necessarily on the field versus him going from strength and conditioning coach to maybe if he went to a lower level school, but I don't know, outside of an FCS school, who was going to give him a shot. So I don't know. This is kind of an interesting case study, because if it works out for Scott Cochran, we could see a number of other strength and conditioning coaches that kind of go this route, where we see maybe this is the next place that we see coordinators come from head coaches come from, is from the strength and conditioning side.
Well, you're going to, over that many seasons, you're going to pick up a lot of knowledge anyway with all the practices and things you've gone to. I threw this out, if you look at the bare minimum as far as a mansion, 5,000 square feet, right? I didn't know if you were aware of this or not. His empire in Tuscaloosa, Scott Cochran's empire, it was the equivalent of over seven mansions, 37,000 square feet, all dedicated to improving the strength and conditioning of the Alabama football program.
Yeah, and again, just within this day and age, the way that, you remember, it was a Mark Stoops 2 years ago, the media days, when he talked about what he had to learn becoming a head coach from being a coordinator, and he said, the biggest thing I had to learn was that you're not coaching the players as much as you are just managing everything with the program, and that you have to learn to be a manager and then hire coaches around you that you trust to be the ones who coach. Why couldn't Scott Cochran manage that, right? If he's managed that much real estate, and he's managed that, he's not going to have maybe necessarily facilities like that wherever, he does get a shot. Why couldn't that guy be the guy that manages the program, makes a big decision on do we go for it on fourth down or not, and kind of manages the players and oversees that kind of thing, and then hire coordinators that can go do, what Brent Venables does at Clemson and Jeff Scott's done at Clemson.